And I know, let's see, one, two, three people who are down, and three guys, tough, strong, down, throwing up in bed, fever, 103, 104, just knocked out. And they're in different parts of the country. I just heard about these in the last couple of days. It's flu season. It's that time of year. And to bring us up to date on all this is our Dr. Henry L. Nyman, PhD, who is with us once a month, sometimes more, depending on the severity of whatever illness we're tracking with Henry. If you look at the bottom of the homepage, you'll find the influenza box that Henry puts so much material in. We have bird flu now out and about, and we have, of course, Zika virus, which sort of retired from the news, but pops its head up once in a while. Henry, welcome back. How are you? And happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and all the rest.
Well, same to you. Feeling pretty good, and it's good to be back and get a little bit of an update here. There's been a fair amount of activity in the last month or so, and both of those areas that you mentioned, both in the Zika and on the bird flu. The bird flu is pretty much in Asia and mm-hmm. Europe and the Middle East and Africa. It's not really returned yet to North America. It's about time for it to show up if it's going to show up this year.
What might we have here? H3N2, what do we have?
Well, the bird flu, we could conceivably get H5N6, which would be a first. And right now that's in both South Korea and Japan. And if you recall, when the H5N8 came to the U.S. 2 years ago, it was most closely related to a wild bird, a crane, in Japan. And so that was kind of that route. It came over from Japan and started out as H5N8 up in Alaska and Canada. By the time it got down to Canada, where in British Columbia, where there was a major outbreak in poultry farms, it had reassorted. It had actually picked up some wild bird genes in North America, flu genes in North America, including the N. So it swapped out the N8 for N2. So it changed the serotype to H5N2. And that's what was showed up in British Columbia, right across the border from Washington State. And then it showed up in the U.S. and surveillance picked up and identified really three different versions: the original H5N8, the H5N2 that was in Canada, and then an H5N1, which was not the same as the H5N1 in Asia. The N1 actually again came from wild birds here, and it caused significant commercial damage, particularly the following spring when the birds started flying back north. They went through the Midwest and hit turkey farms in Minnesota and chicken farms that were layers that were in Iowa. Iowa's the number one egg producer in the U.S., and Minnesota's the number one turkey producer in the U.S., and it really devastated both of those areas, and that was all H5N2. And then last year, there really wasn't... there were just a few cases in wild birds. The surveillance went up dramatically. And in spite of that increased surveillance, the virus really wasn't detected in any mm-hmm. commercial mm-hmm. Facilities and not much in the wild birds. And the same thing happened in Europe. It was in Europe at a lower level in 2014 and then not much in 2015. And it was the same thing in Taiwan. Taiwan got hit very hard in 2014. They had duck and geese farms there that got devastated. And they are the same type of thing, except their reassortment was with local birds from Asia. So the internal genes that got swapped out were Asian, and their serotypes were H5N2, H5N3, and H5N8. And they kind of calmed down in 2016. There really isn't quite the activity that there was. There wasn't nearly the activity. It's just a little tiny bit of activity. It's not even clear what they have right now. I wanted to, before I got into the details on what's going on with the bird flu right now, I want to just kind of wrap things up with Zika. There are a couple developments. Things are winding down in Florida. Florida, just as a reminder, there was local transmission. Actually, there still is local transmission. So just as a brief reminder, the local transmission is via the mosquito. So initially, there were travel-related Zika cases in the U.S., and those are pretty much winding down now. They're relatively rare. They're down to about 50 cases a week, and most of those cases are actually from Florida, or a few are still in Texas. And Florida had local transmission, so they had people that had not been outside of the state that did develop Zika, and then it was identified first in Wynwood, and that identification involved two sets of clusters, but both at their workplace, and they did surveillance of the local residences by collecting urine samples, and they actually found that the virus was circulating in the neighborhood adjacent to these two commercial locations. And so they ended up setting up this exclusion zone where the CDC eventually issued a travel warning and urged pregnant women not to go into this one area around Wynwood. And then that was followed by an outbreak in South Beach. And that time, they kind of changed the requirement. The original requirement was that they just had to have two local cases in one square mile area, and they could define that square mile area as being one with local transmission. Mm-hmm. They upped that to five, so they were getting a lot of local cases. They wouldn't say where they were other than they were in Miami-Dade County, because they said, well, they don't really know where the transmission is, this person. They know who was infected, and they know, you know, where they live, but the argument is, well, maybe they got infected at work, maybe they went, you know, to some other location in Miami and got infected, and therefore they wouldn't say where they lived other than their county. And but then they got five cases in Miami Beach, and so then they had that as an exclusion zone, and that was in South Miami Beach. And then they got five cases in North Miami Beach, and they made that an exclusion zone. So they kind of just tripled the size of the area in Miami Beach, and then they had one more just to the west of Miami Beach called Little River, and so they ended up with four different areas. And the way they kind of handled it is they did some initial testing locally, and then they just stopped testing. And it's kind of like, you know, a game of battleship. They had these little 1 square mile areas, and they just waited to see, you know, where local cases would come from. And if they can go 45 days without a local case coming from that designated area, they said, we're all set. No more local transmission. Nothing to worry about, and they lifted the ban. So they went through that process, and they lifted the ban for Wynwood on September 19th, and then they did North Beach on November 22nd, and then they did Little River on December 2nd, and then the fourth and final area was North Miami Beach or South Miami Beach, which was on December 9th. And so, so essentially, there's kind of an all clear in Florida. There's no area where they have what they call active local transmission, but uh-huh. they're still reporting local cases. So, uh-huh. so the frequency is reduced, but there's still, you know, maybe 5 cases, 10 cases a week that are still being reported as local cases in Florida, most of which are Miami-Dade. And so they're, the CDC ended up making these 1 square mile areas red zones where they said, you know, pregnant women should just not go, period.
Yes.
And then the rest of the area, like for the rest of Miami-Dade County anyway, they made that a yellow zone where they said there's still local transmission. They can't really say where it is in Miami Beach. And so they should just, they recommend that they not travel there.
Do we call this endemic? At this point, Zika.
Well, it's ongoing, and in Florida, they do have mosquitoes year round. I mean, to maintain this, you have to have local mosquitoes active, and they have to get keep the infection going. And like I say, they still do have cases, and it's officially winter starts. In a week or so, and so it'll start warming up again. And if they maintain it in a local mosquito population, and then that population starts to expand more in the spring, and there's still Zika there, then that would be, that would represent an endemic infection of Zika in Florida. Now, it turns out the same thing is happening in Texas, and Texas got into the news several weeks ago when a woman in Brownsville, Texas, which is right near the border with Mexico, ended up being tested positive, and she had not traveled outside of the area and had no record of sexual relationships with somebody who was likely to be infected. And so that was a local case. And then they did a surveillance, except Texas did a little bit different than Florida. Florida, especially at the beginning, they were fairly aggressive. They went door to door and in the area near where these two businesses were, and requested urine samples from the local residents, and they did PCR testing, and that would identify people that had been infected within about 2 weeks prior to the urine collection. And doing that, they came up with 6 positives, and all 6 of these cases were asymptomatic, and the frequency of Zika is about 80% of the cases are asymptomatic, and so they showed that indeed there was Zika in the local residents. It was probably higher than the 6 they identified. They tested about 52, I think, and there would be other people that may have been infected more than 2 weeks earlier, and had basically reduced the viral load, so it was no longer positive on the urine test. And so there was 6 positives and asymptomatic. When Texas did their surveillance, they didn't collect any urine samples, apparently, from people in the area. Instead, they went around a 6-block area near where this one case was, and they gave them instructions. They gave them leaflets, and they said, you want to get rid of standing water and not give mosquitoes a place to grow and lay their eggs. And here are the symptoms, and if you develop these symptoms, give us a call, and we'll come out and we'll collect a urine sample. They got some calls, and they came out and collected urine samples, and they got four positives and counting. And so they've got the original local case, and then they've got four more cases.
Yeah,
and all of these, though, were symptomatic. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if the ratio holds up, if they've got four cases that are symptomatic out of a, you know, of, I think a 4 or 6 block area near where this one woman lived, then they probably have about four times as many people that are asymptomatic. And so they've got, you know, four people that recently developed symptoms. They probably got another 15 to 20 people that got infected in the last couple of weeks and haven't developed symptoms. So they've got quite a bit in that area. Exactly how much they have is a little bit up in the air because they haven't really done anything about testing for asymptomatic cases. And they're relying upon people to give them a call to get tested if they actually do have symptoms. So some people may have symptoms and not be interested in calling unless they get serious symptoms. So the CDC just issued an advisory yesterday, and they're not doing the same thing with the red zone and the yellow zone, even though local media reports did define exactly where this woman lived, or they defined where they were collecting they were going to do the active surveillance and hand out their pamphlets, et cetera. Right. And so it's kind of known where this outbreak is. But instead of doing a red zone for that outbreak, the CDC just issued an advisory with the yellow zone, warning women not to go in that area. And they did it for the entire city of Brownsville. And so Brownsville is under a yellow alert. They've got to go 45 days without any additional cases. It's unlikely that that's going to happen anytime soon because they've got quite a few cases right in that immediate area that are symptomatic. Right. And, so that's kind of what the situation there, and Brownsville's kind of in the same boat as South Florida with respect to having mosquitoes present year round. And so they may end up having an endemic situation. And that's all fairly new. So the actual number of cases that they end up positive is almost certainly going to go higher if they do the testing. Now, the trick is that they basically do an initial test and they just stop testing. And then they're totally dependent upon a passive.
Hoping it goes away.
And the doctor order the test and get the test. And in the case of Florida, they hope they don't hit these 1 square mile areas. And they go 45 days. And after that, they can hit that area again. They got to get up to this, you know, 5 within a 1 square mile area within a couple of weeks of each other to qualify as active transmission. So they set the bar fairly high as far as identifying the active transmission, but they are getting local cases and they are reporting them. And that's where most of the cases in the U.S. are. The number of pregnant women with Zika are going up, and the overall number of travel related are going up, although they're at about 50 a week now, and most of them actually are pregnant women. So, you know, it's not clear how many women are actually coming to the U.S. because they're pregnant and they think they might have been infected with Zika, and that's accounting for some of the cases that are happening now that things have slowed down. Now, if you recall, the Zika cases, the travel-related cases, really started up in the U.S., February or so, in March, and these were people that had gone to Zika endemic areas over like Christmas break, and they got infected when they went on vacation or took some type of trip, and then they they came back to the U.S. and developed symptoms as soon as they returned. They got tested here. So there may be another wave that will be starting in a month or two. And by the same token, the microcephaly cases are delayed by about 6 months because most of the microcephaly cases are from first trimester infections. And so, like in Florida, where they had the local transmission starting in like July and August, cases of women who were in Florida and got infected locally, those microcephaly cases aren't going to start until January, February of 2017. So in the next few months, the microcephaly cases will start to show up, but that's because these women were infected over the summer or early fall.
Okay. All right. Well, we will see what we will see. Now,
So that kind of wraps up the Zika. The bird flu situation is kind of getting out of control.
I want to know what people are getting now, though. Whatever it is that the people I know, they're just really knocked over.
Well, that's seasonal flu, and there's both H3N2 and H1N1 that are circulating in the U.S. now. Uh-huh. So,
best way not to get it, again, people, is don't get in crowded public places. Wash your hands. If you hear anybody sneeze or cough, get the hell away from them.
Yeah, well, what typically happens is there's there's a lot of movement and a lot of crowds over the holidays. And that's basically, and the temperature's getting right for the virus to transmit. So, yeah, it's fairly common for the official flu season begins at week 40. We're in week 49 right now, but it's not unusual for the cases to start to go up the beginning of the year in January and February to see the largest number of cases. It kind of fluctuates somewhat, but that's usually when the cases happen. And with the swine flu, it came early. So, I mean, those cases start in September, October. That's unusual. Most of the time, the activity really begins, more in December than January, February, and probably, the holiday seasons help do it just because there's more movement of people and more likely to be in some type of crowded activity.
Yeah, right. So, hold on a minute, Henry. Let me break and we'll come right back and pick it up. Getting updated here, and we are moving into flu season. Wasn't terribly bad last year. We'll see what happens. Back in just a minute. Hang on. That in almost every case, acquiring the flu, first of all, it's not your fault unless you stick your hands in your mouth and your nose often, don't wash your hands. But there are things you can do to really minimize your risk, and it's up to you. Just pay attention to your surroundings, and when you go into a door in a building, understand that there are an awful lot of germs on those handles, and you got to get in there, and you go and you got to wash your hands before you eat. All right, it's simple stuff. Henry, go ahead. What do we look forward to this winter?
Well, right now the activity is increasing fairly dramatically on the bird flu front. And a month ago, I mentioned that there was an outbreak in mostly in Europe, but it had already spread to the Middle East and Africa. And in the last month,
too, right?
That has intensified. That's the H5N8, which is kind of following the path of the H5N1 back in 2005, 2006. This time, instead of starting at Qinghai Lake, it started at Uz Lake, which is up in southern Siberia, as well as Mongolia. It's a large lake that's mostly in Mongolia. It extends into southern Russia, and there was a big outbreak of wild birds dying off in the spring of 2016. And similar to what had happened in 2005, 2006, in the fall, those wild birds start to migrate, and there's multiple flyways that overlap in that region. And some of them go due south to into India, and others go to the east to go into Japan and South Korea. And others basically go west and go into Europe, and then some fly down through the Middle East into Africa.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned a month ago, this outbreak appears to be quite a bit bigger than the outbreak in 2005, 2006. And if you recall, 2005, 2006, there wasn't that much activity in 2005, or at least there weren't that many confirmations. There were only
four
countries.
Does that mean that the reservoir was building and building over the summer? What does it mean?
Yeah, what ends up happening is the birds go to breed in the over the summer, so they fly north, and they have these breeding locations that are that are in southern Russia or in Mongolia, and they congregate there from many different locations, and they tend to bring viruses with them and exchange viruses. The virus that was in this outbreak over the spring was the H5N8, but it was slightly different. The H5 was really the same H5. There was an H5N8 in 2014, and actually was originally identified in Fujian province, so it's really the Fujian strain, and that's what caused the human cases in China initially, and then has kind of got into the wild birds, and it's now become fairly dominant as far as doing this migration. So in 2014, that it was the same H5 that flew into Europe with the H5N8, and it's the same one that flew into the U.S. and Canada with the H5N8, the H5N1, and the H5N2, and the same one that went into Taiwan. So it started doing this reassorting probably around 2011, 2012. So prior to that, it was just H5N1, and that's what caused the human cases in China. And then it started swapping out its N as well as different internal genes, so you had different constellations, but they all had the same H5, and it was originally called Clade 2.3, and then as it evolved, they kind of added a decimal point and make it the name a little bit, and divide them up 1 year, and then a year or two later, they divide them up again. So it's up to 2.3.4.4 is kind of the version that's causing all the problems.
Sounds like software.
This is the latest and greatest, and it was in 2014, so it's really got the same subclade is still around in 2016, but some of the internal genes have changed, and the Fujian, H5 itself changes somewhat, so there's lineages within that long list of numbers. So even though you've got several versions, even within 2.3.4.4, if you do a phylogenetic analysis, you can see them kind of different versions going in different directions. So this Hoots Lake outbreak was that subclade, but you could distinguish it from the 2014 version. So it had changed a little bit, but the version at Hoots Lake had changed some of the internal genes also. And so even though the serotype was the same, it was very easy to distinguish that. So from the earlier cases. So when they had this outbreak, they published, I think, 8 different full sequences from 7 different species, and they were all closely related to each other, and they could all be, you know, all 8 gene segments could be distinguished from earlier versions. And so it was very easy to track this as long as you got the sequences. And then when it flew into Europe and the original H and N sequences came out, it confirmed that the virus, the H5N8 that was in Europe, was at least the same virus with respect to the H5 and the N8 that had been at Hoots Lake. So it wasn't the 2014 version. You know, there were several different subclades of that were flying around. It was distinct from all those. So it was easy to identify the Zeus Lake version. But then when fuller sequences came out, when Poland, I believe, did the first full sequence, it was clear that of those 18 segments, only 5 of them were from Zeus Lake. So the virus had actually changed between the spring when it was first identified there and the fall when it started showing up in Europe. And the 3 of those internal genes had actually been swapped out for 3 wild bird genes. One of them was found in wild birds in Europe, and the other 2 were found in wild birds in Asia. And so it might have even been a 2-step process where when it was in Hoots Lake, it picked up the 2 Asian ones, and then shortly after it started heading towards Europe, it picked up one more. So the virus that was in Poland, and then full sequences came out of Sweden, and they matched the version in Poland. Sweden actually did both poultry sequences as well as wild bird sequences. And there was a little bit of a difference between the poultry and the wild birds. But as far as the constellation was concerned, they matched each other and they matched the sequence in Poland. So clearly, at least what was in Northern Europe was a slightly different version that had picked up 3 local sequences. And then today, there was a new development in the Netherlands in that they got a new serotype. So it was, instead of being H5N8, it was H5N5. Oh. And the OIE report just came out today, and I ended up contacting the author of the person at the National Labs that did the report, uh-huh, to find out if indeed this H5N5 was a reassortant from H5N8. And by the time I contacted them, I was already pretty positive that it was. And the reason was that there had been an earlier report of 4 tufted ducks that had been at this one lake in the Netherlands.
You can't trust those tufted ducks.
Actually, most of the H5N8, you know, pick a species, is actually the tufted duck. So far, there have been more tufted ducks than any other species that have been positive for the H5N8. So
sounds like a main course at a Chinese restaurant, Henry. We'll have the tufted duck, yes.
Yeah, well, I don't have the scientific name in front of me, but it does have a name, but they call it tufted ducks. And essentially, these 4 were at this one lake. And then when the report came out on the H5N5, one of the positives of these OIE reports is that they they give the map coordinates, so it's not just the location. They and depending upon the country, sometimes it'll go out 4 or 5 digits, and that's for both the latitude and the longitude, and so it gets to be pretty very precise. I mean, some of the countries, when they have it in farms and they give the coordinates, and the coordinates fall right on the roof of the barn. I mean, they zoom right on in to exactly where the outbreak was, and so these hands think about 5 or 6 digits coordinates for these four tufted ducks, and then when the H5N5 report came out, they gave the coordinates, and guess what? They were exactly the same, and so the and it turned out that H5N5 was in a tufted duck. So when I saw that, and they were at the same location, it seemed real likely that that these did come from the H5N8, and then the person who wrote up the report for OIE gave me the head of the lab that actually did the work, and she wrote back and said that, yeah, sure enough, it was a reassortant, and it actually involved those same four tufted ducks. And so what had happened is they had those four ducks and they tested them initially, and they were H5N8, but I guess they were all four were H5, and they did one or two, and they were N8, and they reported them as H5N8. But then when they looked a little more closely, they found out that of those four, two of them were H5N8. One of them had both H5N8 and H5N5.
Not to be trusted, I told you.
And the fourth one just had H5N5. And so that indicated that this is a pretty recent event. They actually got caught in the act, if you will. I mean, these reassortants happen when one host is infected with two viruses, and then they go and they swap the genes and they come up with combinations. And so one of these actually was infected with both H5N8 and H5N5, and one of them was H5N5 and the other two H5N8. So yeah, they were all tufted ducks, and they were all in the same lake found at the same time. They were all dead, but they were in the same location, and that indicated that they didn't necessarily get infected at that lake. They all ended up dying at that lake, and
Rest in peace. That
out of those four, they had three different combinations, indicated that this was a fairly recent event and hadn't really sorted out, and it's likely that this H5N5 will start to appear more frequently. Now this is the first time that that a reassortant like this in this highly pathogenic version from Asia actually did pop up in outside of Asia. Actually, I mean, as I said, the this reassortant had been happening in China since 2011, and there was quite a bit of activity. Well, I take it back. The same thing did happen in North America. So in North America, they had the same thing in 2014, where H5N8 led to H5N1 and H5N2. But that type of combination hadn't been reported in Europe. So this is really the first time that one of the H5s from Asia had actually evolved into a new serotype that showed up in Europe. And so it's likely that there's going to be more of this. The number of cases continues to go up. It's actually moved into this this one region in southern Hungary where I think they have a very active poultry area where they raise ducks and geese for I think export to much of Europe, to tell you the truth. And they have just been hit really hard. The number of farms now that are confirmed is today it went up to 161. They're reporting new farms every day. They file a new OIE report. Today I think it was 25. Yesterday it was 39. The day before I think it was 35. So they're doing 25 to almost 40 new outbreaks each day. And like I say, they're up to 161. They're very precise. You can mm-hmm. check out the map. The map has the marker sitting right on top of the barns. And and you can see that there's 161 is a lot of farms, but it's pretty easy to look at them on the map and see that, you know, the infected farms are, you know, right across. Oh, from an uninfected farm. So there's still quite a few duck farms that have not been reported as positive. But it's very devastating there. There's quite a bit of activity in Israel also. Israel, I think, is they don't have as many farms as they have in Hungary here, but I think they're up to
if it's in Hungary, the chances of keeping it confined to Hungary aren't very good.
Well, no, it's not confined at all. Hungary is they're unusual in that they have all these poultry farms in a fairly densely populated area, and mm-hmm. they're going up dramatically. The other countries, many of the other countries like Germany, have reported, you know, a lot of cases in wild birds, and Switzerland has done a lot of wild birds. And so the virus is not at all contained. Nobody's saying it's anywhere near contained. And right. as I said, right. it was a month ago, it was, significantly higher than the 2005-2006. Uh-huh. And if you recall, there were only four countries that reported H5N1 in 2005. And then it went to about 50 countries in 2006 as the birds headed north for the spring. So the spring is usually a lot worse than the fall. And that happened in 2006. The same thing happened in the U.S. These big outbreaks that I mentioned in Minnesota and Iowa, affecting the eggs in Iowa and the turkeys in Minnesota. Neither of those states, or no state in the Midwest, reported any H5N2 in the fall. In the fall, the activity was largely in the west when the birds were flying down. And then when the birds flew back up in the spring, that's when all the activity happened in the Midwest there. And so it's likely that as far as hitting other farms and spreading, it'll calm down over the winter. And then when springtime comes and these birds fly back to their nesting areas where they have a new round of egg-laying of babies, on their way up there, then they'll be infecting these various farms and mm-hmm. other local birds, and it'll explode in the springtime. So the Hungary is just an example where it's exploded here, in the fall, almost winter now, when it got into an area where there's a very high concentration of, in this case, ducks and geese. And Israel has got six or seven there, and the virus is all over the place. I mean, it's been identified in Tunisia, and it's been a limited number reported anyway in Egypt, and it's in Israel, and it's in the other places.
Well, it sounds like it's ready to, it's all wound up and ready to go off. Armageddon.
Yeah.
Just around the corner.
That's what's going on with the H5N8. Now, there's another problem with the H5N6, and the H5N6 is in South Korea and Japan, mm-hmm. and H5N6 has caused human cases in China. Uh-huh. There were two cases so far last month, and that brings the total number of reported human cases, I think, up to 17 now for H5N6. And a report just came out a couple of weeks ago from the national lab in China, and they did surveillance at their live bird markets to see what was circulating, and they found that H5N6, and the H5 and the H5N6 is the same H5 as in the H5N8 that's in Europe and the Middle East and Africa.
Right.
And that same Fujian one is the one that had been in the U.S. is H5N8, and H5N2 caused the problems. And that H5N6 is now pretty much replaced H5N1 in China. And so there's more H5N6 than H5N1. And they released a whole series of sequences. I think it was over 1,000 sequences from additional human cases, as well as mostly poultry cases. And
right.
and that kind of filled out the picture on what happened with many of these human cases. And the human cases, there was swapping of the genes, and the H5N6s, as I said, has the same H5 that was in the original Fujian H5N1. And then the N6 came from wild birds, which I think were H6N6. But then the other six genes, the internal genes, it turns out most of the cases at the end of 2015 and those at the beginning of 2016 in Guangdong province, as well as some earlier cases in Yunnan province, had actually swapped out the H5N6 internal genes for H7N9 internal genes. And if you recall, the H7N9 was a major problem in China. And one of the changes they had was in the PB2, the polymerase gene.
Well, it killed people.
It's what?
It killed people.
Oh, it's still killing people. It's got a high case fatality rate. It's not quite as high as it was when it first showed up. But it's still around 30-40%. It's got a couple of those changes that were associated with adaptation to humans, and one is this E627K that allows the virus to grow at the lower temperature.
The bird temperature is
41 and the humans are 37.
All right. We're out of time here. We got to wrap it up. So we've got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, so wrapping it up, the H5N6 is devastating the poultry in South Korea. They're talking about killing off 10% of the population just to try to control it, but it is out of control there. And the H5N6 is in Japan, and just as a recollection, that when the H5N8 came to the U.S. in 2014, it did match the version that was in Japan. So all of these are to be continued. As I said, they're usually worse in the spring than they are in the fall, and the outbreaks are clearly among the biggest on record.
Okay, Henry, thank you. Everything we needed to know and then some. We'll see what happens in the next month. You have a wonderful holiday season. Take care.
You too. Take care.
All right.
Okay.
Enjoy.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Henry Nyman, and all you ever wanted to know about the current status of the influenza virus. Okay, we will be back.